The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Chodesh Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. We've woken up this morning to some very fascinating news from the Heinz Beans Company.
Ooh.
And Heinz has announced that they have launched a new range of food called Heinz Beans Hummus.
Oy.
And the hummus is spelt with a Z, just to keep the whole thing, alliteration going through the whole system. Heinz Beans Hummus is apparently, obviously, hummus-flavored or hummus-type food that Heinz has developed.
Wow.
On a beans base. And apparently, they come in three flavors. You can get the regular flavor, or alternatively you can get, which is called the original, or you can get the chipotle chili flavor, or you can get the roasted butternut squash flavor of Heinz Beans Hummus. And apparently this all came, it all involves a tweet that came out some time ago, where the Israeli official Twitter site responded to Weetabix, because there was some talk about putting Heinz beans onto Weetabix in order to try and change the flavors a little bit. And apparently the Israeli state official Twitter site suggested the possibility of hummus onto Weetabix as an alternative way of altering the flavor a little bit in order to make it sort of more Middle Eastern. And it wasn't Weetabix who took this up, but rather Heinz themselves who produced this Heinz Beans Hummus range. So it's quite interesting. I haven't tasted it, and I'm not quite sure if anybody out there
will.
Is interested to taste it. But this is also apparently the Heinz UK website apparently also contains a recipe for baked beans shakshuka, for those who want to go down that particular route.
It could be quite interesting, actually.
It could be quite interesting. I personally have never quite got on top of this whole producing something in it with a flavor of something else. You have a coffee flavored chocolate, and then you have chocolate flavored coffee.
I'm not quite sure. I love coffee and I love chocolate, but I actually don't want them together. I'm obsessed with coffee, but I don't like coffee flavored anything unless it's coffee.
And also the whole ice cream with flavors, I don't really know what ice cream tastes like anymore, because we have, mint flavored ice cream and chocolate flavored ice cream and caramel flavored ice cream and all the different flavors. So what does the original ice cream flavor really taste like? I'm not really sure.
That is a very, very deep thought, Anthony, coming from the Israel Report. Okay, this is a very, very strange story, and quite alarming, because Israel has issued a warning to Israeli citizens in Turkey to leave and return to Israel immediately. That is very unusual.
It is very unusual, and it clearly comes on the back of something which is very much actual, a very real,
and sounds imminent.
And imminent. They like to use the word imminent, and it certainly is imminent. Apparently, according to a report on Israeli TV, 100 Israeli citizens who are currently in Turkey have been advised officially by Israeli security officials that they are in Iran's crosshairs, and they've been advised to return to Israel right away. So, the word imminent obviously comes to mind. Israel has clearly been tracking the Iranian operations that are going on around the world, particularly potentially that might threaten Israeli citizens. The Mossad has recently thwarted a number of Iranian attacks, efforts to target senior Israeli figures as well as Israeli business people around the world. And we understand from this particular report that in light of the recent assassination last week that took place of Colonel Hassan Sayed Kodai in Iran, in the middle of Tehran, actually, that the level of threat has been increased, not only against those 100 individuals who the Israeli security officials have personally contacted to advise them to leave Turkey and to return to Israel, but indeed a general travel warning has been issued for Israelis to Turkey to advise people to be very, very vigilant indeed, to advise people to be concerned about how they present themselves in Turkey, to try to conceal the fact that they might be Israelis, because there is a sense that if you are an Israeli in Turkey right now, that you may be under threat. And the National Security Council has recommended that all Israelis who are in Turkey should avoid contact with strangers. They should refrain from giving out personal details, particularly about their military service. They should make sure that they have the phone numbers of the Israeli delegation and emergency services with them at all times. And apparently they should not publicly display signs that they are Israeli. So this is the official warning that has gone to Israelis in Turkey, not quite saying don't travel to Turkey, because of course we do have a diplomatic situation, and if the Israeli government issues an official warning to Israelis saying don't travel to Turkey, that could potentially damage relations which have been slowly thawing between Israel
it really
and Turkey.
Does. I was thinking about that this morning. Is it that it really does come at a bad time, because we're finally seeing this nice improvement between Israel and Turkey in terms of their relations, their relationship, and now Israel has got to tell Israelis to leave the country.
Yeah, I mean, it also reflects on the Turkish authorities, because if Iran has decided to use Turkey as a launch pad for attacks against Israelis, then the Israeli government could quite legitimately say to the Turkish government, you guys are not doing enough to protect our citizens and our tourists in your country. So therefore, it comes as no surprise that we are forced to warn people to leave, because if the security levels were high enough, and if you were firm enough with Iran about the attacks that they might wish to carry out in Turkey, then we wouldn't have to conduct these activities and we wouldn't have to warn our citizens. So I think it does go both ways. And rather than just create a major diplomatic incident, Israel has decided to kind of almost overstep the Turkish authorities and just say to Israelis there, look, you are not safe in Turkey right now. That is an established fact. There is this imminent threat. And so we would advise you to leave rather than to try to raise it with the Turkish authorities, because, I mean, there is also potentially a sense that even raising it with the Turkish authorities at this late stage wouldn't be enough.
Ivana asking, what about flying Turkish Airlines? A lot of South Africans fly Turkish to fly to Israel. It's a very nice connection. Would there be any advice on that?
So at the moment, there is no advice about using Turkish Airlines as a connection. It's not only South Africans use it as a connection, but indeed Israelis do too. It's a very, very convenient connection. And especially it's become very popular for Russians who don't have easy access to the general world to use it as a connecting port. So at the moment, there are no official warnings about using Turkish Airlines or traveling through the airport in Istanbul, which I've personally used in the not too distant past, and it's a very, very convenient and a very comfortable place to connect. So at the moment, nothing formal, no formal warnings about Turkish Airlines or about using Istanbul
and
as a connecting
point. If you're staying within the airport, I would imagine it's less of an issue, because
you're in a very safe
zone. So I would think that if you're staying within the airport system, you're probably okay at this point. An increasing number of Israelis have been visiting Saudi Arabia recently with full official visas. What's happening here?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting development, because as we know, there is no official diplomatic relation between Israel and Saudi Arabia, and yet we've seen a thawing of ties over the past few years with the Saudi authorities. We've seen, first of all, there were attempts by the US government over the last couple of years to somehow try to bring Saudi Arabia into the Abraham Accords and to try and encourage a formal peace agreement to be signed between Saudi Arabia and Israel. I think that the Saudi authorities, and particularly the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS as he is commonly known, I think have considered to be a step too far right now for the Saudi authorities, for the Saudi regime, to sign with Israel. But that doesn't prevent them from conducting a whole number of unofficial gestures that they've made to Israel, including allowing Al Al to fly over Saudi airspace, particularly when flying to the Emirates. They haven't quite got as far as allowing Israeli flights to India or to China to fly over Saudi airspace, but we think that that may well be something that we could consider in the near future, not only India and China, but also Thailand, if the Israeli airlines were given access to Saudi Arabian airspace to travel to those destinations. It would cut a significant amount of time off the time that is used, that it currently takes to fly to those destinations. So even though Saudi Arabia has given access to Israeli aircraft, particularly flying to the United Arab Emirates and also to Bahrain, it's not quite there yet for some of the other destinations. But interestingly, over the last few weeks, dozens of Israeli tech entrepreneurs and business people have flown to Saudi Arabia, apparently for advanced talks on potential Saudi investments in Israeli companies and Israeli investment funds. And, you know, this, of course, as I say, is quite surprising against the backdrop of the lack of diplomatic relations that currently exist between Saudi Arabia and Israel. But also, it was given some sort of a shot in the arm, some sort of an injection, when Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, announced that he's setting up this investment fund, and that the Saudi Arabian government will be committing quite a lot of money. Jared Kushner said that his investment fund will be the size of about $3 billion. And I've heard rumors that the Saudi Arabians may well bring as much as $2 billion to this particular fund to invest in Israeli tech and Israeli companies. So there is a lot of action, a lot of activity going on at the business level. And it reminds me a little bit of what went down with the United Arab Emirates, with Abu Dhabi and with Dubai in particular, but before the days when there were formal diplomatic relations between the two countries, there was a huge amount of business activity flowing between the countries. And even though it was relatively unofficial, it was official in the sense that the authorities knew about it, but it was unofficial because, of course, it was in the days when no diplomatic relations existed. And so it reminds me quite a lot of those days that we saw with the United Arab Emirates. We're seeing that now with Saudi Arabia. And apparently the Saudis have said quite openly that they are very interested in looking at Israeli technology and cooperating more and more agricultural and high tech and other areas that Israel has to offer. Apparently the Saudis are very interested in that. And so we're just seeing more and more of that happening below the radar, under the radar, instead of in an official way. And the moment the time is considered appropriate to enter into more formal diplomatic relations, I'm guessing that all of that business activity will suddenly come above the radar, and we'll suddenly have visibility of exactly how much activity is going on. But it seems to be quite significant at the moment.
Really incredible, and so wonderful that it's moving in this direction. Israel has launched its own sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah. I mean, for people who don't know what a sovereign wealth fund is, this is an investment fund that is launched by a government, a national government. That's a sovereign wealth fund. And the most famous sovereign wealth fund and the largest sovereign wealth fund that we know about is the Norwegian government sovereign wealth fund, which currently manages more than $1 trillion. And Israel has finally launched its own sovereign wealth fund. This was a law that was enacted in 2014 that established the sovereign wealth fund, which is collecting money from the oil and gas industry. And the idea is that the revenues that enter state coffers from the excess profit taxes that have been imposed on Israel's gas fields since 2011, actually, as well as revenues from excess profits that have been imposed on other natural resource production, such as potash and bromine and phosphates, all of that money is due to be contributed to the sovereign wealth fund. And the idea was that as soon as 1 billion shekels have been received into state coffers from these sources, that the sovereign wealth fund will be set up. And that will be tomorrow, on the 1st of June, when finally we have 1.1 billion shekels that can go into this particular fund, even though we understand that there's another something like almost 800 million shekels lying around there that hasn't quite been contributed yet, but is on the way. So this means that the Sovereign Wealth Fund will have a value of almost 2 billion shekels at the outset. And according to the law that was enacted, there will be a year that will pass where money will simply be contributed into the fund. And then after that year has passed, up to 3.5% of the revenue that is earned by this fund will be available for social and economic and educational aims. So this is all about setting up a fund, the income of which will be distributed for social needs in Israel. And if we look at Norway again as a classic example, because it really is a very good example, we see how amazing the social benefits are in Norway for the citizens of that country, because they derive income from that sovereign wealth fund. So this is a really, really good news for the state of Israel, and we hope that more and more money will be contributed to this fund, and that obviously there will be more and more revenue available for social, economic, and educational aims. And we're expecting that the fund will grow quite significantly. Most of the money to date has come from the Tamar gas field. And interestingly, just yesterday, the Minister of Energy has announced that further gas fields will be open, further tenders will be made available, and therefore further production will take place out of Israel's gas fields in order to try to take advantage of the huge demand which exists right now, the lack of supply as a result of the war in Ukraine, which has really reduced the extent to which countries around Europe in particular are using Russian gas. So there's going to be much more activity in Israel's gas fields, and hopefully therefore more money contributed to the Sovereign Wealth Fund. Really good news for all of us.
Really fantastic indeed. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.